and welcome to the Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are broadcasting live from skidrowstudios.com right here downtown, and we are on the internet, live radio, and we're so excited that you've joined us. We're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we're here to talk about what it is like to be an entrepreneur. And so we'll be sharing business tips and just what the journey is of the guests that I have. And we'd love to hear from you. So if you have questions, please give us a call. The number is 1-800-893-9562. And I am here today interviewing Sarah Horowitz of Sarah Horowitz Parfums. And I hope I got that right. So hi, Sarah. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here today. And I'm excited to find out about you and your journey and what it is that you actually do. So tell us, what is it that you actually do? What is Sarah Horowitz Parfums?
Well, first, thank you for having me, Jan. I'm so excited to be here. And it's funny you called it a journey because that's what I call what I do. I call what I do a fragrance journey, actually. And I don't even know where, I guess I could start at the beginning, but I am a perfumer, and I started perfuming when I was 18 years old. I walked into a store in Boston that did custom fragrances in between classes in college. And of course, you know, I had time to kill. So being an 18-year-old girl in Boston, I went to Newbury Street to kill some time. And there was a store there that was called Essence that had an apothecary set up. But it was the late 80s, so you have to imagine it had, Enya playing in the background and crystals in the window and all these gorgeous bottles layered on this old, like, 18th century library unit. And it was just gorgeous. And when I walked in, the man there said, "May I anoint you?"
Ooh.
And I said, well, I didn't know.
And you were under his spell at that point.
Immediately. And I didn't know what it was, but I said, "Sure, of course you can." And then he said, and this sounds so cheesy, but it's true. He said the words that changed my life. He said, "Well, you're so unique. Shouldn't your fragrance be?" And again, being 18, I said, "I am unique. Of course it should be." And I ended up staying at that blending bar. I missed my next class, and I worked with him to create my first fragrance that day. Over the course of my college career, I worked there. Eventually, he gave me a job, and I was spending so much time there, I think he eventually took pity on me. But, I worked there through college, and the year that I was graduating college, where I studied, you know, very business-oriented classes like acting and philosophy and religion, I came to a point where it was the end of my senior year and he had decided he was going to sell the business or close and move. And there wasn't another high-end new age blending bar down the street. It was a very unique, one-of-a-kind experience. And I had read everything I could on perfumery. I had developed my own technique. I had fallen in love with it. And I thought, well, I can't just get another job doing this. So the obvious answer was to buy the business at 22. And there was another girl that worked there that had also fallen in love with it. So we borrowed money from our families. We saved money from working, and we bought the business when we were 22.
You said this would make a great graduation gift, right?
Yeah. Well, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, it's funny that you kind of made light of it, that the classes that you were taking didn't maybe necessarily lend themselves to, quote, business. But on the other hand, maybe you wouldn't have been so open to doing something that seemed kind of frivolous, doing your own perfume, mm-hmm. going into this where they've got the crystals and mm-hmm. and something along those lines, if you hadn't been taking those kind of classes.
Well, it's interesting you say that because obviously, you know, it was very, at the time, it seemed very esoteric, but there was a business there, obviously. And I think that although I do speak lightly of it now, all of those things came to pass to work with how I work. So what drew me to the custom experience was that it was a perfect way for me to ask the most intimate questions to total strangers. So I was able to sit with someone and ask the questions that I was also really interested in my philosophy classes, which are, what do you think? Why are you here? What do you believe? Who are you? What do you love? And I was able to ask these questions from multiple people that, you know, I would never have met otherwise. So that was where the philosophy part came in that really you know, it fed my desire to create these fragrances based on who these individuals were.
Yeah, very unique and one of a kind, and really tapping into to you being very authentic and very tapping into their real selves as well, to be able to speak to who they were.
Absolutely. And then the performing arts aspect, a lot of what I do now is I teach classes. I do, you know, personal appearances. When you're, you know, when you have a brand, you have to be out there sort of selling your fragrances. And even just the interaction with the interpersonal, there is a lot of that emotional connection that taking acting classes when I was young, you know, I think that there's, it all leads to, you know, every step that you take leads to the next step. So I think it all did, you know, none of it was for naught.
And really contribute to your strengths and your personality. And that's something that I'd really like people to understand. You know, there are no wrong roads, and this does really help to prepare you for what's coming next. And like you said, taking those classes really helped you to maybe even go into that store in the first place. You know, if you were a very practical kind of person, that may have seemed like a frivolous kind of venture, and this helped you to really recognize that this could be a viable business, but yet also doing something that was in alignment with who you were as well.
Absolutely.
Now, 22 years old, buying a business, that must have seemed a little bit unusual for many students that were just getting ready to graduate. And that's not just your typical little, here's a few books, or let me maybe give you a car, which mm-hmm. would still be a pretty big expenditure, or mm-hmm. or possibly a trip somewhere kind of exotic. What were your parents saying? And friends who were graduating wondering where the hell they were going to get their next job.
You know, it's interesting. I didn't think of it in those ways, although my parents were extremely supportive, although they thought I was a little bit crazy. I mean, I came from, you know, nice Jewish parents on Long Island, a doctor and a lawyer. So to become a perfumer who studied philosophy and acting was very off the grid. But they were exceedingly supportive, and they always encouraged me to follow my dreams. And I think that if it weren't for that, I wouldn't have been able to do it. But when I bought the business, you know, they say, if I knew then what I know now. And when I was 22, I wasn't thinking, I was very present, and I wasn't thinking about the big picture of where would this be in 3 years or 5 years or 10 years. I was literally at the time thinking, I love what I'm doing and I don't want to stop, and this is a way to keep going. And so had I known in the moment how much more there was to running a business than working in a business, you know, would I have made the same decision? I'd like to think yes, but really it was trial by fire. So I jumped in that moment, and, you know, friends and family maybe thought it was a passing phase, but most of the part, people were very excited. I mean, I had really become this... the perfumery and identifying as a perfumer became so ingrained in who I was and how people knew me by the time, you know, I'd been there for 4 years. It was such a part of my persona even, you know,
that
I don't think anyone was really shocked. Although I think that the surprise was that, you know, I think maybe they thought it'll be a couple of years and we'll see what happens next. And the fact that my business in California, so I sold that business after my portion after 2 years and moved to California in 1994 to start this business. And it's going to be 20 years old in November. So I think the longevity is what's the most surprising to myself as much as anyone, because when I started, it took me years to even identify myself as an entrepreneur.
I can understand that. A lot of people have that difficulty. And I know even when I became a mom for the first time or a wife, it felt very strange having those words come out of my mouth. So I understand calling yourself an entrepreneur, and especially when you love what you're doing so much.
It's true. It took a very long time for me to actually say I'm a business person, because I always thought of myself as a perfumer. I love what I do and I have a business. But over the years I've realized, okay, you know, I've had to get down and dirty in it, and it gets real gritty. And then at times it's, you know, wonderful and amazing, but there is so much more to running a business than just having the joy of creating a fragrance. So it's sort of like, it took a long time for me to be able to say it, even that I was a perfumer, because I wasn't classically trained. I'm self-trained. And then after years saying, well, look, I have created all these fragrances, mm-hmm. so apparently I'm a perfumer. After 20 years, I can say I'm a business person. You know, I am an entrepreneur. So, yeah, but you're right. That's a great example of when you first get married and the day after your wedding and you're like, oh, am I really someone's wife, or is that just something I'm
pretending? Does that even mean? I know the first time they call you, if you take your husband's last name, mm-hmm. it's like, no, that's the mother.
Right.
That's not me.
Exactly. And kids too.
Yeah.
How can I be someone's parent?
Yeah, exactly. So did you, I do definitely want to get into what you're doing now and what brought you to California and just really understand exactly how you got to doing what you're doing. But being someone so young to buy a business, were there some difficulties that you faced with vendors who had been accustomed to dealing with this gentleman previously? And was he a mentor when he sold the business to you?
Also a good question. There wasn't really an issue with the transition with vendors, because both Dawn, the woman that I was working with is named Dawn Spencer Hurwitz, and she and I had both been placing orders for a while. So in regards to the vendors, we already had built our relationships with them. So there wasn't a transition there. And the gentleman that owned the business, his name is Mark Enos. He was an incredible mentor to us in regards to the art, you know, the business part, the fragrance part. But he actually moved shortly after, so he really wasn't there.
And we didn't have internet and cell phones. And
exactly. So we did learn a lot of it trial by fire in regards to just, you know, the reality of payroll and, you know, taxes and licensing and insurance and all the things that you don't think of as an employee. But then once you're an owner, you realize, oh,
right,
there's a lot more to this.
Exactly. And so how did you go about finding all of that information? Did you ask for help? Did you just say, oh, that's the IRS? They want money from me?
Well, he did leave it very organized for us. And, you know, like I said, I had a partner that was also, you know, in it with me. And we sort of followed suit with what had already been established and set it up. And then after those 2 years, I moved to California and started my own here. So, yeah, it's hard to say. It's kind of a blur. The first couple of years, they were kind of a blur.
Now, a lot of people think about getting a partner. Was there a whole lot that went into that? Were there some difficulties that resulted from having a partner? I mean, did you all sit down and say, okay, this is how we're going to divide the partnership? This is what happens if we have a disagreement?
No.
I mean, we don't always think about those things. We just jump into it because, hey, this sounds good. And at 22, you were very wise to purchase a business, to even have the confidence to do that is really a big deal. It really is. And I hope that you'll own that, because not many people would.
Well,
a lot of people play it safe.
I think that's, thank you. You know, whether I'd love to say it was confidence, and I feel like that there is a certain amount, because we had been doing it, we loved it, we had clients, neither of us, I think, we didn't sit down and really plan things out the way I would say now I would. And there were some challenges. So
I don't mean you don't have to spill your guts or anything,
but in general,
people do wonder about what it's like to have a partner, and what are some things that you should look for before you go into partnership with someone.
I can speak to that, and not just in, you know, my first partnership, I was quite young, and so both of us it was our first business venture, and neither of us knew what we were doing, and we had been friends, and there were challenges there, but at this point, like, it's all, you know, it's all fine. She's extremely successful in her own right in Colorado. But I can say, based on my own experience, not just with her, I had another experience where I entertained the idea of partnership. Partnerships either really work or they really don't. They're very, very challenging. And I think the only way to create a successful partnership is to have very, very clearly defined roles before, as you enter, not down the line, like as you enter, clearly defined on paper. And, you know, there's always in any area of life, you know, with any relationship in life, communication is key. And if you can communicate clearly and cleanly and with respect, you have a lot more success in a partnership. But I've learned through not just my own experiences, but I do, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but I'm hired to design fragrances for a private label. So businesses come to me to design a fragrance that then they're going to launch under their own name. And over the course of the last 15 years, I've seen, you know, a good handful of partners come in. And I can say that out of that, maybe one is still, you know, partners. Either the business didn't work or they split and one of them owns the company now. And it's, you know, I always really, really counsel them at this point at the very beginning, because they usually come to me in the beginning of their business venture, to make sure they have everything clearly defined and in writing. Because again, partnerships are much more challenging. I feel like if you have the right partner, it's the best thing in the world.
Right.
Because, you know, one thing I've definitely learned, I'm sure you can speak to it, is that we're not all experts in everything. And I know at this point what my strengths are and what my weaknesses are. And I can't do it all. So I definitely would love to have that sort of relationship, that partnership where I know I can do what I do, and then I let someone else who knows the other ends of it that can do it well, beautifully. I think the conflict with partnerships is where there's an overlapping desire to be one part of the business or another, and it's not clearly communicated. So I think as long as you have communication and clearly defined roles, I think partnerships can be great.
Yeah, that's really, really great, great advice. Thank you. So you sold the company after a couple of years. Did you sell it to your partner? And what made you say, I'm leaving Boston and coming to California, land of dreams.
Okay. So
and sunshine.
I'm going to give you the full reason for that. First thing is, depending how deep you want to go, I knew I wanted to move to California from when I was a little girl, from New York. And when I was 8, my family took a trip here. And I completely felt like I was home. I loved it. I remembered it from when I was 8. You know, the ocean met the mountains and the palm trees and the weather and the weather and the weather. I loved it. And I felt like, and still do, feel like there's a palpable feeling of opportunity and possibility in Los Angeles and California. So when I was 8, I fell in love with it. And then again, when I was 14, I went on another trip to California, and again I felt that same calling, like, oh my, this is where I'm from in the future, this is where I'm from. So I knew in the back of my mind I always wanted to come to California. And then when I was in Boston and I bought that business after I graduated college, our lease was up. So basically we had a 2-year lease, and simultaneously a couple things happened. One was our lease was coming up, and the other one was, you know, I quite honestly was in a relationship that ended, and it was, you know, heartbreaking as it can be at that time. And I really just had to get out of Boston. I felt like everything I saw reminded me of the, you know, that. And I knew I want, and the trifecta of that was, it was, and probably not this winter would beat it, but that winter in particular was bitterly cold and crazy windy. And I remember walking down Boylston Street and seeing an old woman holding pole, like on the corner, like just like a light pole or something. And the wind was blowing so hard that everything on her was blowing, and she was holding onto it. And I thought, people should not be living like this. I can't. And so when my lease was
don't
up.
Don't tell anybody.
I hit my you know, that was it. And
yeah, the breaking point.
Yeah. So when our lease was up, I just worked something out with my, you know, the partner. And I took my part of the oils. And with some friends, I, you know, drove across country and moved to L.A.
Did you know anybody here?
I knew one person who was amazing, and she was a client. And so when we had our store, it was on Newbury Street. So in Boston, that was like the hub of shopping and, you know, travel, and there were hotels there, and it was amazing. And so months before I moved, and I knew I was going to move, I had business cards made with a voicemail number, because it was before cell phones. And I started making a list of people who came into the store but were from California. So I would give out my card, but also I kept a little list so I could have a mailing list for when I moved. So when I moved here, I did have a very small mailing list that I had gathered from Boston. I had my little car. I had my phone number in advance.
Marketing.
Marketing, yes, my advanced marketing.
Hey guys, and something's wrong with the recording. I have no idea. It's not recording right now.
Oh, no.
And I tried to push it, and it's not even going. So I have to get a hold of Jeremy. I tried to call him, and he didn't answer.
But oh, no.
Wait.
I hope that you guys have extra time so that we can actually...
None of that was recorded?
It normally goes like clockwork.
Oh,
and
my...
It's usually just going, and I looked over, and it's not recording.
Oh, my God, dude. We've been talking for 20 minutes, and
can
it was
anybody,
all great.
It was great. Can anybody hear the show?
It's live, yeah.
Oh, so they're hearing what we're saying now?
Okay. Sorry for that momentary lapse of reason.
Darn. You know what? This is life, though. And
at least we're having fun.
We're having fun, and I'm getting to know more about you. And hopefully we have listeners who are listening to call us. We'll fill in the blanks. If you're just tuning in and you don't know what's going on, we've just found out that we're not being recorded, which we had hoped that we were. But I'm here talking to Sarah Horowitz, and she has a company called Sarah Horowitz Parfums, and she's a perfumer. And I think this is just so fascinating learning about this. So we're just talking about the point where she took this big flying leap and jumped off the cliff and said, "Hey, I'm packing it all up and I'm taking it all to California." The land of opportunity and plenty and good weather and let me see if I can make my mark in this town. Mm-hmm. So you came here with just knowing one person, a handful of contacts that you had made, which I think is fascinating because I think I told you in a conversation that we had that I really didn't even know that this existed. Except I saw it on a TV show. And I think it's really quite fascinating. And so to be able to go in and create your own essence and I think is really kind of exciting. So.
Well, I do love it. And I still love doing it. I still love creating individual fragrances. Although, you know, I create fragrances for ready, you know, that are pre-blended that people can purchase. But the individual interaction is still my favorite.
So you came here, you had your bags,
yep.
And what did you do? I mean, I hopped on a plane and flew to Aspen from Georgia when I was in my teens, late teens, and I didn't know a soul and just kind of landed and went and checked into a motel and said, I'm here.
And what did you do?
Well, I worked a series of odd jobs and things like that. But I mean, so what did you do when you got to California? Your bags packed, you drove out there with friends.
Yep. I had four roommates and myself. We drove across country.
Oh, they wanted to move to California
yep,
too.
They moved across. We all moved together. We were a very interesting crew. And
anybody have jobs lined up or
no,
anything?
None of us had anything. None
the
of
things
us had
you
anything.
Can do in your youth, right?
24.
And capture that, though, because I love that spirit. And that's what holds a lot of people back is, I don't have a plan and I don't know what I'm going
much,
to do.
We just trusted that the universe would provide. we all had some money saved, not a huge amount, but, you know, a little bit. And we drove across. We had two cars. One of my roommates, Chris, had a snake as a pet, and he traveled with that.
Oh, no.
And had a mouse as a pet. It was very odd.
And the snake grouping. Didn't eat the mouse?
Well, I mean, we're so off topic, but actually the mouse became a pet because it was supposed to be a meal, and the snake didn't eat the mouse, and we said if he survives the night, he earned his life. And so,
oh my gosh, this is kind of giving me the creeps.
Sorry, that's a totally hard left from perfumery, but we had a very interesting drive across. We took 2 weeks. We stopped, we camped, we stayed in hotels. We had a great time. And then we got to Los Angeles, and we did not know a soul. I knew one person, like I said, that was a client of mine that was very, very generous, Mortonette Jenkins. She was amazing. And she was a backup singer, and she let me stay with her and her family for a couple of nights. And my roommates, we stayed in a hotel, and then eventually, I think one of my roommates, Rima, met someone or knew someone. They let us stay with them for a couple of nights, and then we found an apartment, and we rented a 3-bedroom apartment in Hollywood.
And this is before they could really go back and check all all of these things about this motley crew.
Yeah, we were quite a motley crew, but I had my oils, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. And so a couple of things happened. This is all true. I still have it. I had a Sears Roebuck toolbox, like a toolbox, and I put 150 maybe of the most, of my oils, but in little bottles. And I...
Okay, great.
Are we good?
We have video.
Yay. Hi. So I had my toolbox, and I had all my oils and my little bottles and all my things set up in my toolbox.
I love it that you put it in a toolbox.
Oh, it's because it had a handle.
Yes.
I could carry it. So I had my toolbox, and I moved to LA, and I started going, and I figured, I was 24. I had already owned a business for 2 years. I would be such an asset to anyone. And everyone kept saying, Fred Segal, you have to go to Fred Segal. And I had never heard of Fred Segal. So they told me it's on Melrose and Crescent Heights. And so I called and made an appointment. I had an interview with the owner, whose name is Ron Robinson. And he interviewed me. And I proceeded to tell him how much he needed me in his store at Fred Segal. And I could just have a little, I could build out a corner and, have my own business there. And he humored me for a little while. And then he offered me a job, I could be their perfume expert, and I would work in just his store. And I said, okay, I'll do that. I needed a job.
So. Now, did you get to do your own perfumes as well?
No. I worked there. I did part-time, so I worked there 3 or 4 days a week. But to his credit, and he has long since become a dear friend and colleague of mine, he's been such a support, but he let me take him out to the parking lot where I had my Jetta parked, and I made a fragrance for him with my toolbox out of the back of my Jetta in the parking lot. And so he was amazing that he even let me do that. And then I worked there, and I worked there 3 or 4 days a week. And on the other days, I would go anywhere I could. I would go, I would literally walk on Melrose or La Brea with my toolbox and go into stores and say, I can make you a custom fragrance. And I was charging, $100 or whatever it was. I started setting up at farmers markets, Whole Life Expos, talking to stores that would let me put a little table up on a Saturday, like anything I can do to get the word out. And it evolved from there. Plus, I, while I was at Fred Segal, I wore my fragrances. I was learning. I mean, the best education I could have gotten in regards to my specific industry of niche fragrance was working at Fred Segal, working at Apothea, because Ron had a collection and still does of the best high-end niche fragrances, which I didn't at that time know existed. I always thought of fragrances, Nordstrom or Macy's or Blooming. I didn't think of high-end niche, these little indie brands that could have beautiful fragrances that didn't have huge distribution, that were in smaller bottles. Like, it just never occurred to me. And I got a glimpse into a greater world.
Plus, really. You really got to study your ideal customers.
Yes. Exactly.
And that's really huge.
Some.
Yeah. Huge. The other thing that I'm hearing and recognizing is that sometimes it just takes pure gumption, mm-hmm. and being able to propose something that may seem completely
crazy
or maybe not appropriate. Like maybe if you had asked somebody, well, should I ask him if I can create a perfume for him and take him out and show him my, I'll whip up a fragrance for him out of the back of my Jetta, out of my toolbox, they would have said, are you crazy? You can't ask somebody like that.
Yeah.
You can't say that. But yet you just had pure moxie, pure gumption. You really believed in your product.
In Yiddish, we call it chutzpah.
Yes.
Chutzpah.
Yes.
And I look back now and you're right. I mean, it's again, one of those situations where I didn't really know to think any differently.
Which is great, because you really shouldn't think any differently. And if we can capture that spirit that you had at 24 and infuse that, no matter what age you are, when you're opening up your business and going after what you need to go after. I mean, this was such a great training ground for you. It was such a great opportunity for you, mm-hmm. and such a good way to start to integrate yourself into society, and not just working at Fred Segal, but even having that gumption to just go into store after store. And yeah, they might say no, or going to the farmer's market. And yeah, people might kind of just look at you like, mm-hmm. you know, what are you doing? But that's how you're getting out and building your brand.
Absolutely. I work as hard now as I did then, but I have to say that the way, you know, at the time, this was my, I have two children now and a husband, and I have a wonderful family, but I do think of this business, it was my first child in that sense. I mean, I really, there was no one out there doing what I did that I could sort of look at the road and say, oh, that's how I'm supposed to do it. And, you know, I'm going to quote my mom, because I remember having a conversation with my mother early on, and she said, you know, there's two different kinds of road. There's the paved road, and then there's the one that you need a machete for. And she's like, you're just a machete kind of girl. Like, that's how it is. And so I guess that's pretty much how I saw it at the time. It never occurred to me to look for the path that was paved, because I knew what I wanted to do. And I just thought, all right, you know, I had nothing at that time, especially, like, there was nothing to lose. I was just going to do it.
And, exactly. And failure is not an option. You've got to pay rent.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it was, I look back now and I think I'm so grateful for the beginnings that I had. And I met the people that I met along the way are still in my life, many of them. And they're, you know, the fact that I can call colleagues, to people that I've looked up to and admired as much as I have, is incredible at this stage.
Well, I love the path that you've taken, and love what we're able to learn from the things that you've done. And I think that those are the points, the key to success, is being willing to take a risk. And putting yourself out there and taking chances and not being afraid to ask somebody, hey, look at what I've got. And another thing, too, is even not letting ego kind of get in the way. And what I mean by that is that there's a certain kind of, to be 24 years old, to have already owned your own business, to have sold your business, to be taking a chance, you're coming out to a place where there might have been a little bit like, I kind of a little know-it-all, mm-hmm. you know, like, well, I've already been there and I've already done this. So if he's not going to let me have my own corner in the store, then I'm too good to go and work behind a perfume counter.
Well, I did, though. I didn't think I was too good, because I worked for him. I worked for him behind his perfume counter. And I do count it as one of the most educational periods of my life. And through that time, and then I moved to Malibu, and I worked in Planet Blue Essentials, which is another store that's just grown and done incredibly well.
Right.
And the owner of that store actually let me put my case. I eventually evolved from my toolbox to a beautiful case that held all my oils. And the owner of Planet Blue, Ling Su, she let me set up my case on Saturdays at the Cross Creek Country Mart, which is right. In Malibu, great shopping area. And that really helped propel the business as well. And, you know, I started seeing more clients right there in Malibu. And I created a fragrance that we sold. One of my first ready-to-wear fragrance was developed because a client in Malibu freaked out over a perfume I made that was a gardenia base. And the owner said, oh, can you put some of that in the store? And I said, oh, something like it. Yeah, I can. You know, I didn't want to do the exact custom, but I did, right. and that was how I did Perfect Gardenia. So really working for other people was incredibly educational and helpful. But I think that I look at the next leap, like you had mentioned, like jumping off the cliff and trusting you're going to be caught before you splat on the ground.
Yeah.
So the first leap definitely was moving to California. But the second leap was in 1997. I was working at Planet Blue part-time, and also building my business. And I finally hit that point where I said, I have to either work for myself or I have to work for someone else. Like, I have to do it. And so I left Planet Blue and started to, you know, fully find ways to support myself through my own business in yeah. California. And that, to me, also, that was like the second time where it was jumping off a cliff. but that's how it's been ever since.
Well, and hopefully there's certainly something to be learned by working for someone else, but there's also at some point you're ready to fly.
Yeah.
And so I value that you did that and that you recognized what you learned. You took the time to build your clientele and to probably even build your confidence a little bit in an area that you weren't that familiar with when you first came. Mm-hmm. And those are really important things to consider when you're starting out. And sometimes people look at you and not just you, but others who have been successful with their business, and they think, oh, they just did it. They just did it. And there is no just doing it. So it's these little steps that are helpful to anyone listening about what it takes. It takes grit. It takes belief in yourself that you can do it, knowing when you're ready to fly and knowing when you maybe need a little bit more time in the nest. And so those are all really quite important, and not letting an ego, like I said, letting an ego get so involved, like, oh, well, I've already owned my own business, so I'm not going to go to work for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And not that you might not have been incredibly successful doing that as well, but being willing to say, hey, there's more things that I can still learn and just prepare myself to be a big success here.
Well, you know, that you mentioned something that I just want to touch on, which I thought was I think you're perfectly saying it, and I would like to just amplify it, which is that even at this point in my career, I still know how, I think when you think you have nothing left to learn, you need to stop, because
absolutely,
I feel like there's so, I'm just scraping the, you know, I'm still just the tip of the iceberg of how much that I still consider, even though I teach, I still consider myself a student, and there's so much more for me to learn both in business and in the world of perfume. I mean,
I learn every day.
Exactly.
I agree 100%. And anyone who thinks that they don't have anything new to learn, they do. They need to stop. Stop everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because we all learn from each other, and we all learn new things every day, even if we don't necessarily recognize them. So good point. Very good point. Who inspires you?
Well, let's see. I mean, there's the obvious ones to that, which I guess I'll say first. And that are, of course, my kids, you know, my family, my mom, my dad. Like, I'm inspired every day to get out there and do more because I have two daughters. And, you know, they make me want to be successful, more successful. They make me want to be the best example that I can. And, you know, they have a working mom, so I'm not there as, you know, I'm not at the school every day. I don't get to do all of the things, but I want to be an example to them in other ways, and I feel like that inspires me to keep going every day.
And that's really important to kind of know what that why is, too.
Yeah, and I want that. I want to be able to have something for them to look at and potentially, you know, inherit someday if they choose to.
How old are they?
5 and 10.
Oh, they must love it. Mommy, let me smell this.
They're, you know, it's funny. They do. They both love it. I think my older one loves it, but also is like, you know, she's at that age where it's not as cool as makeup or it's not as cool as something else, you know. But yeah, they inspire me. And then I'm also inspired by, you know, just other, you know, I'm inspired by like our friend Nikeo, who is a woman, a powerful woman who has a vision and is pursuing her dream and bringing, you know, meaning to her products. I think women that do that are amazing. Robin Kohutching, who is also an inspiration to me and someone that's been a mentor to me over the years. And then I'm inspired by women like Jo Malone, too. I mean,
right.
Let's face it. I look at that example of how she grew her business and did eventually sell it, you know, but she followed a passion and started something. And I love how she did how she grew her business as well.
And this is something that I recommend to all entrepreneurs is really study those who have been successful. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean copy them. It means study, you know, what are some of the things that they have done that have helped to take them down that path. And whether it's determination, whether it's being different and how they've set themselves apart. It's really great to model yourself after someone who's already been successful. Mm-hmm. And eventually you'll find that other people are modeling themselves after you.
Yeah. It's true. I have to say, I mean, there's the world is filled with inspiration when you look for it. And just recently, I'm going to tell you about it, but I can't even tell you the name of this woman because I was watching a TED Talks. I was watching a series of TED Talks.
Love TED Talks.
I love it. And there was a woman, you know who she is, but she's a 60-year-old woman who she swam from Cuba.
Oh, yeah, Diana Nyad or something like that.
She swam from Cuba to Key West. And I watched her TED Talks, and that was one of the most inspirational things I've seen because she had attempted to do it, I think, at least 3 or 4 times. And what she said, which I thought was so profound to me, and it spoke to me, and we can speak more on it, but, you know, the road to success isn't always just, woo, you know, it's filled with little valleys. And she said that along the way, people would say, you know, that she had her failures when she didn't make it. And she said she never looked at them as failures. They were the foundation upon which she built her success. And so she learned from every time she tried and didn't make it, she learned something more about the process to tweak so that she eventually can, and she just kept going. And I love that because my business is 20 years old and I have definitely, you know, I have more road to go to get to where my goals are.
Well, you're still very young too.
Yeah. But I definitely am, you know, I'm not to where my goal would be. And I'm sure, you know, when you get there, there's always another one in the distance. Otherwise, you know, I think you have to have that. I always looked at it like an anchor, you know, and you throw your anchor out into the future and then you pull yourself to it. But by the time you get close, you're ready to throw it and pull it.
Sure.
You know, throw it again because you've got to have something to strive for.
Yeah, keep moving the finish line.
Yeah, but that really inspired me because there's so many things that happen in your career, you know, perhaps for all of us and in life where it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go, or you make an effort and it doesn't work out the way you thought it would. And it's hard to not look at that as a negative, but that, you know, if you do and only take it in as the negative, then that's all it's going to be. So I really loved her talk. Like, I felt that was very inspirational.
I agree. I hope everybody will go and listen to that as well as check out your website. What is your website?
SarahHorowitz.com. SarahHorowitz.com.
Fabulous. So let's go back to when you decided to leave your position in Malibu. And like you said, this was like the next sort of big monumental moment of jumping
off the cliff. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a plan? Did you just say, I think I'm
it's
finished
time.
With this. I'm going to close the chapter on this door and I'm going to leave. So did you know what you're going to do or you just thought I'm leaving?
Well, actually I'm going to speak to two things there. The first is you said, did I have a plan? And the answer is not really. And what I've learned is if I can give any advice is that it's important to jump, but having a plan would be most beneficial. when I look back.
Because you're not sure whether you're jumping into a pit or whether you're jumping into.
Having a plan is definitely, it's something that I never made a plan. I just sort of went along the way and said yes when people said, can you do this? Oh, sure I can. And I kept going. But I'm at a point now where a plan is incredibly important. And so, and I would advise anyone wherever you're at, I think planning, you know, it doesn't mean that you can't take risks or jump, but having a plan perhaps would have been more beneficial. That being said, when I left Planet Blue, what happened was I had reached that point where I really felt like it was time. And simultaneously, I was approached by a company that owned Trap Candles, which is a candle company. They were out of Kansas City, and they had a line of candles, and they wanted to launch new candles, new fragrances, and they didn't really, the company that acquired this candle company didn't really know anything about fragrance, but had been to Malibu.
Did any of their candles previous to that have fragrances?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it was a small candle company that was acquired by a larger company that was also in Kansas City and knew the owner and loved it. And they bought the business, but then they didn't know what to do. They wanted to launch more fragrant. The candles they had had like 4 or 5 fragrant candles. And they wanted to launch more candles with fragrance. And they didn't know anything about fragrance, but they had shopped. They went to Planet Blue and had bought Perfect Gardenia. And they fell in love with them. They said, well, they want a candle to smell like that. So they contacted me. So they offered me a consulting position where I worked for them on a monthly consulting, and I designed 12 different fragrances for Trap Candles, which are still selling today, by the way. Very exciting. And that was my, what they were paying me for the month was enough to cover my nut, you know, cover my rent right. and my overhead. And I said, that's it. This is my signal. I'm doing it. And so I left working for anyone else. And I worked for them as a fragrance consultant and perfumer. And I developed fragrances for them while I was also doing the fragrance journey. And the other thing that happened in 1997 that was sort of the beginning of the rest for me was I started getting press. And it was very unsolicited. I didn't know that there was such thing as a publicist at the time. And how it happened was one of my clients, a very vocal client, was at the Coffee Bean in Malibu. And a girl in front of her said, "What fragrance are you wearing? You smell so good." And she said, "Oh, well, it's my own custom fragrance. And this girl in Malibu, she makes them." And she had my card on her. So she gave my card to the girl in front of her, and that girl, her name was Anne Weintraub, and she worked at Vogue. And she contacted me, and she put a little blurb in Vogue magazine about me doing custom fragrance in 1997. And from there, suddenly I got contacted by other magazines, and I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. And so I sort of organically started getting press that way. And so that sort of elevated the business to a different level where it started getting a little more national attention for something very, very specific, which is the customization. So those are the things that happened right that same year, 1997, where I was able to sort of take the leap.
A good springboard. Yeah.
Exactly.
Were you afraid, even though you had those things going on and since you didn't have a plan, were you ever afraid, like, well, I'm leaving kind of the safety of Planet Blue behind. Will I make
yes.
it? Will I pay the rent?
I still have those days. Yes, I was. But
how do you get over that?
I just get up every day and keep going. You know, the business is support. I mean, at that time, I just took that leap. I just took the leap. And I knew I had that money that was coming in from Trap. I knew, you know, it wasn't indefinite, but it was enough to cover my expenses, like I said. So I just kept going. I just kept trusting that more was going to come. And, you know, now I've had a lot of amazing opportunities over the years, and I look at them now and I'm going to say that they were foundations for my future success, but I learned a lot from them. And that's the thing, is there's always something that's coming. And thus far, I've always been caught. So I just keep going. I mean, I love what I do, so I just keep going.
What do you love about that you do?
In perfumery, I love seeing the look on people's faces when they smell fragrance that they've never smelled before and they think, oh my God, that's me. I love that. I love educating people. I love seeing the look on their faces when something clicks and they go, oh, that's where that came from, or oh, that's what that means. And what's amazing now, today, 2014, is how much this niche industry has grown and how much interest there is in indie perfume and artisan fragrance and the handcrafting of things and independent perfumers. When I started, there really was so few out there, and now there's really a community that's grown up around it, and it's pretty incredible. So I love being a part of that community as well. So I love that. And on a business side, you know, as challenging as it is to own your own business, and it is, I love being the captain of the ship sometimes. I do. And even though I'm at a point where I would love to work I definitely am open to that partnership part in certain aspects of my business. I love, you know, having that feeling of going in and saying, I can work this. I'm going to do this. I love the freedom of it.
Yeah, I think that's great. Really, really awesome. Where do you have a storefront? Have you had one since you sold your business?
No, I have a studio. And so our studio is by appointment. There is an area where people can come in and shop for retail and also do custom, but we work solely by appointment because we are so individually based. Like, we give so much attention to our individual customers that that's part of it, is that even if you want to come and, you know, if people want to come and just smell the fragrances, we're totally open to it as long as they make an appointment first. Because if we're working with a client, we're working with that client, and they've paid for the time, and so we want to give them that attention. And also, we do events as well. So there are times where, you know, we're not there during the day because we're set up someplace else. So we do have I have a studio in Westlake Village, but we're, like I said, we're by appointment, but it's absolutely beautiful when you come.
Well, good. Well, I'll have to come and visit.
Please do. Actually, we're having a holiday boutique on, I think you'll be away. It's May 3rd.
Oh, yeah.
May 3rd, we're having an open house, and we're going to have our fragrances and jewelry and, you know, all kinds of great stuff. But
well,
custom as well.
If next time you have one, I definitely want to be on the list. Let me know. But if someone wanted, is this open to the public or?
Oh, yeah. On May 3rd, it's open to the public. It's 3 to 6 in Westlake. And then the studio itself, as long as you email or call and make an appointment, we can open and, you know, service you whenever you're, you know, fragrance needs may be.
So they can get your contact information by going to your website.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Now, we don't have a whole lot of time, but I keep wanting to ask you about defining your sense of smell. Did you just always know, because obviously I know when I like something that I'm smelling, and there's, I know when there's something that I don't like, but for example, with wine, that's probably been the main thing, trying to, you know, sniff the essence of it. And I'm not like a wine connoisseur, so I don't even know that I can say that. But people say, well, do you smell the grapefruit? Do you smell the wood? Do you smell this? Mm-hmm. And I have to say that I can't always do that. Have you always known that you had this keen sense of smell? Because I'm sure it must take that to be able to create these fragrances.
Well, I always did have a very keen sense of smell, but I was always very sensually oriented. So, you know, taste, touch, scent, all of those things. My parents were always convinced I was going to lose, you know, I was always reaching out for something and they thought I'd lose a hand. But I, over the years, have honed it. So, you know, when I first started in Boston, we would have, you know, we would close our eyes and have to smell different things and identify it with our eyes closed.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the training exercises. Plus, my fragrance organ now has over 300 oils. And so part of it is that I have to be able to identify them with my eyes closed. So I can, a lot of perfumery happens in your head before it ever gets in the bottle. You have to have an idea of how they're going to interact with each other. And then you get them in the bottle and then you can really do fine tuning and evaluation. But I think that with your sense of smell, like anything else, if you really want to hone it, take your other senses away, close your eyes and smell something and you'll find that it amplifies and you'll be able to experience it even deeper.
That's
on an
great.
Even deeper level.
Now, what is your, do you have a favorite fragrance in terms of earthy or floral or something along that line?
Yes.
I'm just curious.
You know, I can appreciate a lot of different fragrances, but what I would personally wear is, I'm still like a little hippie in heart. Like, I love patchouli and vanilla and musks and jasmine. Jasmine grandiflorum is probably my favorite. Although in the world, when I walk by a lemon blossom, like a lemon tree, the lemon blossoms, and particularly here in Southern California, night blooming jasmine and the citrus blossoms, for me, there's nothing like that on earth. I love that fragrance on the air.
That sounds like something I would love for sure. Well, what is your best business lesson that you could share with us? Even though you've shared many with us today, that's a question that I like to ask at the end, is what is your most favorite business lesson, the one that maybe you've had to learn through hard knocks, or the one that you wish you had known when you started, or one that you've just kind of learned along the way from everyday life?
Okay, the most practical business lesson is get everything in writing. Really, like, write it down, get clarity, and get everything in writing, because that, to me, is the one that I've learned the hardest. That's the lesson, I would say. The most spiritual, I guess, or just like the most, you know, the thing that's the top level, most important, is really know who you are as an entrepreneur, but as an individual, because, and I say that to all of my clients too, why does the world need another fragrance? You know, when people come to me and say, oh, I have this brilliant idea and I want to launch a fragrance, and I say, why? Because if you can't answer the why, then you're not going to be successful. You have to have a point of difference, and the point of difference can often just be who you are and what you bring to it. But if you don't know that, it's not going to fly. So those are my two things. Get everything in writing. My lawyer would love me saying that, by the way.
I think that it's so get everything and in so writing. Important. And hard to do, though.
But you have to do it. And also, and I found this very late in life. I only have this now, and I can tell you, get a good lawyer. I have a great lawyer, Alan. My lawyer has just changed my perspective and made me feel like I had a, you know, I have a, you know, support, like a protector. And so it's just away from all of the esoteric part, very practically, get everything in writing and have a good lawyer, because it's such an, you know, business. You could get into it because it sounds fun and exciting and you just love it. But at the end of the day, it's business and you need to make sure it's done right and clean and straightforward.
And know who you are and that point of difference.
Absolutely. Know who you are. Know your why.
Know your why. Thank you so much, Sarah. This has really been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Truly my pleasure.
Thank you.